And that was awesome last session. So I'd like you to welcome to Buying and Merging for Growth. Established advisors are taking it to the next level. And so we've got some of our stellar established advisors taking it to the next level here. I'm Ross Schmidt. I practice in Colorado, Aspen Wealth Planners, and be your moderator for today. So I'm going to introduce each of our speakers here. Penny Marchand is the principal of Cambridge Financial Group. Penny started her career in financial planning in 88. She's a registered investment advisor, a graduate of the College of Financial Planning, and an enrolled agent. Penny is a founding member of ACP, Cambridge, which is now ACP. Penny has served a three-year term on the board of directors and has also served as the president of ACP. Next, Kelly Adams. Kelly is the owner and senior planner of Harbor Light Planning in Michigan. She is a CFP, an EA, and a NAPFA registered financial advisor. Kelly joined what was to become the ACP in 98. She has since trained, including me, many advisors in ACP's holistic financial planning philosophy and methodology, and has served the organization in a wide variety of roles involving ACP's training program, annual conferences, and new member mentorship, to name just a few. Kelly currently serves on the board of ACP. Last, Meredith Briggs. Meredith is a partner and CFP with Taconic Advisors in Poughkeepsie, New York. She began her financial services career in 2005 as a product salesperson for a large I couldn't resist that one.
It's true.
But she came from the dark side. quickly realized that fee-only holistic financial advice was her passion. In 2009, she became a CFP and began working for a fee-only wealth management company. After relocating to the Hudson Valley in New York, Meredith worked for TIAA CREF as one of their top-ranked wealth management advisors, servicing high-net-worth nonprofit employees and executives. In 2015, she found her dream job, joining forces with veteran ACP member Chip Simon. Oh, he only goes by Chip, sorry. And shortly thereafter, she became a partner in the practice. Please help me welcome Penny, Kelly, and Meredith. So each of the advisors are going to talk about their experience in growing their practice and the various ways they did this.
Me? Okay. So when Joanne sent out an email, if anybody had wanted to speak about buying and merging for growth, I thought, well, that is me, because I have bought, merged, and now have sold. So I have really run the gamut of buying, merging, and now selling. In 1993, I joined Burt's firm with Cheryl. Well, not quite yet, Cheryl. But anyway, I worked there a couple years. I went to Vermont. I tried to merge with a practice, disaster. I moved to Flagstaff, tried to merge with a practice. We called our name Dwyer Marchand. He wanted to do fee only. Ended up being a disaster. Ended up back in Tucson with Burt and Cheryl, and then in 2001 bought out my 60 clients and started my own practice, Cambridge Financial Group. I have never been able to be the person that could call my friends or sell. For me, the momentum of buying a practice, joining a practice, merging a practice is the only way that I could grow, because I'm not good at selling. So for me, that really worked. In 2010, I thought, I'll have a partner because I need to get bigger, and I was starting to get a few clients. So a good friend of mine, he was fee-only, NAPFA fee-only guy, joined my practice, and another disaster, because all three of the ones that didn't work were because our values weren't the same, because I really believed in comprehensive planning, and like the last guy, he was an AUM guy. Why did he want to review insurance policies? He made more than I did per client. It just wasn't going to work. All great people, but I think the problem was that there was not enough similarities, and that's why in 2015 I bought Cheryl's practice, and it's so fun that she's here. I think it was 42 clients, Cheryl, maybe it was 40, but it was right around that. And that was the best experience ever, because we were ACP people. We had the same values, we had the same methodology, we used the same tools. And so what I did there was Cheryl stayed on as a subcontractor, which was really a good way to do it. My staff met her clients with her, then she stayed on as a subcontractor the next two appointments, I think. And it's now 3 years later, we have lost two of the clients. One has actually wanted to come back, and we said we didn't want her. And the other one, you know, we lost him. But I think the transition couldn't have been better. Then fast forward, somewhere in that time, I started teaming, my company started teaming with Bert on 17 of his wealth management clients in Tucson. And that was in 2013. So we, a couple years ago, bought those 17. And we kind of did it the same way, not quite as easy. The beauty of doing it with Cheryl was we literally did it on a napkin at breakfast one day or something. I mean, it was the best possible way to do it, because we trusted each other. We knew what we were getting into. It just worked, and it was wonderful. But since then, I did buy Bert 17, and now we're at 222 clients. And I think, you know, when you get that many clients, what happens? Your referral base grows. And we've consistently grown at about 10% a year. But obviously, with 222, you are going to be growing a lot faster. And you know, you need the staffing, so come to my session on Friday about staffing. But, right, Christine. Anyway, that's a key part to merging and growing, and you've got to make sure you have the staffing, else you'll just get killed. But the big takeaway that I wanted to tell you was certainly the company culture. The company culture is so important, the values, but it's such a great way to build your practice. And especially with ACP, we all are kind of doing it the same way. And you younger people, you see all the gray-haired people or those that dye their hair. This is an incredible opportunity to, rather than have to, you know, start in a bedroom in your house, get involved with the practice with the intent of then buying that practice. To me, it's the best way to do it. But I think the company culture, the shared values, and then make sure it's a good deal for both parties, because if it's not, it's not going to work. And certainly, I think, Cheryl, you would say it's been a great deal for both parties. And so that's my experience, and I can't imagine having done it any other way. And now I just sold 10% of my practice to Alicia Klein, who is now part owner, and the idea is then to sell 10% of my shares of my company. So, and that seems to be working. We didn't do it on a napkin, but there is a lot of trust, and I think that trust is hugely important. If you're trusting the person, then it makes it all work.
Penny probably should have gone last, because I think her story's probably got the most meat to it. But for me, I joined ACP in 2018 by coming on board as an employee of Cambridge Connection, which was at that time Bert, David, and Christine's company. So I worked there for 5.5 years. One of the things that we had there was an employment contract. And right in our employment contract, it had the provisions that if we did want to leave and we were in a role where we had our own client base we were supporting, we could proposition the clients to come with us. And it had in there the specific timelines, procedures, percentages, and how it would be paid out. So that was my first succession. I did that in 2003, so I opened my practice in January of 2004. I took approximately 35 clients with me, which, so I left one firm and basically started a firm with almost a full practice. It had the revenue I needed to support my household and my business. And I really didn't have any intention of growing much, you know, beyond kind of organic, getting some new clients in. And then we went to Vail in September of 2000, or August, or some, it was still summer, early September. It was still fall, but we did get snow, so I know it was early September. So we went to Vail. Still the best conference ever, or best place ever. It really was. And one of our advisors had a really rough time there and just getting over altitude sickness and not doing well. And it turned out that after she got home, she actually was ill and needed to offload her approximately 24 clients very quickly. And I told her I probably had place for maybe 10. But it turned out she wasn't able to place the other 14. So I ended up taking on 24 clients about 10 months after I had just bought out my own and was still working on trying to figure out my processes, procedures, and what I was doing. And she hadn't met with most of them since tax season. So that was like a really, really big scramble. So in that particular case, it was quick. It was another ACP member, so it did make the transition easy because the clients were already in our philosophy. And since she had also been a member of Cambridge Connection and bought out her clients from BERT, we had some unwritten parameters if we used the same type of distribution or payouts. And hers was kind of a fire sale because of the quick nature of the solution to make sure that the clients were serviced. So hers was about 50% of revenue. Just because of the nature of that particular issue. So I found myself by the end of 2004, with about 65 clients all by myself and still struggling to figure out how I was going to handle what I originally had taken out. So needless to say, in 2005, I did a raising of the fees because a lot of the clients had been on the old fee schedule, you know, when... Yeah,
40%.
It was, yeah, you had the first year fees, and then the renewal fees were like 20% of the first year fees. So I raised fees a lot to try and cull off those people that were, you know, and reduce the size of the client base to something slightly more manageable by myself, because guess what happened around that time frame, you know, recession, housing crash, you know. Detroit area was hit hard, so I lost a lot of clients for that reason, but I got it down to somewhere around 50 or just under 50, so it was still became more manageable. And then in 2017, or I should say we started laying the groundwork probably about 3 years prior to 2017. Ron Shaw, who was another ACP member, and we lived close enough and to carpool a lot to tax conferences up in Lansing. So we spent a lot of time driving back and forth for CE credits. And I kept saying to him, and he'd go, hey, I want to retire. I think I just want to let everything kind of, the clients kind of naturally attrition out, and then I'll just be done, you know, when the expenses get too high for the income. And I'm looking at him going, that is so silly. Why would you do that? You didn't have a lot of clients in the first place. I'm like, why not just sell them? You have value there. So I, you know, shot myself in the foot by saying, you should just sell them. They have value. So in 2017, early in the year, he goes, I think I'm getting close to being ready. And I'm not sure if it's this year or next year. And I went, oh, okay. And so he's like, this is fall. This is early fall now in 2017. And he goes, I'm going out of the country for 2 weeks. I'll think about it more. We'll talk when we get back. And he was still in the, I'm not sure if it's this year or next year. And I'm going, at this point, it's fall. Next year, please. Next year, please. He comes back from his trip and says, I'm done. And I'm out in December. Oh, okay, it's now the middle of September, and you want to be done in December. So he actually had done evaluation through FP Transitions, which is awesome for the seller and horrid for the buyer, because it came back at about 2.3 times revenue. So I was like,
really?
Oh, you're killing me, because I'm thinking 1.5 would be a good offer. So we spent a lot of time negotiating. Thankfully for us, we had a lot of years of history. We really trusted each other, liked each other, and really wanted to find a good solution for the clients that made him happy enough and made me feel like I wasn't being bled dry. So I actually ended up at the end of 2018 taking on 19 of his, I think he had 24 clients. A couple of them he knew wouldn't come. Couple of them, I think two of them went over to Irfan. So, you know, I got the ones that I should have gotten, I guess. They seem to be pretty happy. So that's kind of how I built my business. I mean, I've obviously gotten new clients along the way, but I've never really done any marketing in between, because every time I turn around, my business was full. So now my challenge is I have 65 clients and losing my staff member. So I'm back to where I was in 2003 with 65 clients and on my own and trying to figure out what the next steps are.
Well, my story is probably a little simpler. I had about 9 years of financial advisory experience when I happened to meet Chip Simon at a community foundation's breakfast for financial advisors. And we're sitting at the same table, and Chip says, I'm a fee-only financial advisor. And I was like, oh, I used to work for one of those. And his little radar went up, and he said, we should have lunch. And at the time, I was working for TIAA CREF, and I'd been there for several years. My client base was building. I was getting referrals, and I kept getting more and more assignments. And I was on the road. I was working very long days. I have young children, and I was really getting burnt out and knew it wasn't really what I wanted to do long term. So Chip kind of hit me at a good point in terms of I was thinking about making some transitions. So we ended up having lunch and breakfast for probably a year. Gradually started to kind of formulate a plan for how I was going to exit TIAA and buy into his practice. And Chip was very upfront from the very, very beginning. You know, you would be so good at this. You could start your own firm. You could do this. I'll show you ACP. I'll show you how to do it. And for me, that wasn't really an option I'd ever even consider. To start my own business from scratch was just too scary with a young family. The idea of creating my own website, my own ADV, and all of those things, and then gradually building was just way too overwhelming. So unexpectedly, I was let go at TIAA, Chip and I had a plan. I was gonna join him shortly after, after a big payout, and all of that suddenly shifted. And I called Chip. He was at the conference for ACP in Alabama 3 years ago, and I knew he was getting ready to meet with his study group. And so I called him the night before. I was like, Chip, I've got some big news. And I think he thought I was expecting or something. But guess what? You know, I'm ready a little faster than we expected. And he was amazing. He stepped up and brought me on board and put me on the health plan and got me going within about 3 weeks of that big news. So I joined forces with him in December of 2015 and became an ACP member shortly thereafter. And we have a very open way of talking about business, and that's one of the keys I think that's really made our partnership so successful. And right up front, I said, you know, I really don't want to be an employee. The whole interest here is I want to be a partner. I want to have control and direction over what this company is going to be. And so we, within the first 3 or 4 months, had negotiated a price for how it was going to buy into the practice, and both agreed that we would be equal partners, and this way we had equal say in the development of the business. And Chip and I have actually a similar amount of experience as financial advisors, but we're at different ages and stages in our life, and so I wanted to make sure I had a voice in what the future direction was. And one of the tricky parts was I had a non-compete from TIAA. I could not bring any of my clients over for 12 months. And initially, this was kind of daunting. I knew I had a lot of good relationships that could benefit from the fee-only model, but I couldn't go after those right away. Now, at the same time, Chip was pretty much at capacity. He wasn't bringing on new retainer clients. So it gave me the opportunity to use that 12 months to really learn the ACP system. I handled, or after sitting in on a number of meetings with Chip, I started to do all of our financial reviews, and any new prospects were people that I was pairing up with and taking the lead on. I think one of the things we didn't expect was, or maybe underestimated, was the amount of training and how many questions I was peppering Chip with every day for months and months. But I was so grateful to have that mentoring and to be able to learn under another advisor who had learned this very systematic process of how we do our business. So at that time, I think we had around 60 clients on retainer. We have gradually built up the business, and I'll talk a little bit about our numbers in a moment. But we set the price kind of right on, and then it took us about 6 months to actually negotiate the terms of the agreement. And we were very much kind of on the same page. We had a clear idea of what the price was, how we wanted to arrange things, but working out all the details took a lot more effort than I originally realized. And the way we did it was we worked together with a local attorney. We kind of brought him all of our ideas and outlined what we wanted the agreement to look like, and then we went separate ways and had our agreements reviewed independently so that we felt like we were well covered. And there were a couple things I was really worried about. One thing was attrition. I'm going to be buying into this practice, and you know, I don't know what Chip's going to do. Like, what if he's just like, I'm out of here, and the clients don't stick around, they don't like me. So I was really worried about that. I realized later on, I think I had some trust challenges. I had to really get to know him and understand that this is somebody that I can rely on. And over time, there's no question. I think I liken that process almost like you're dating, you know, and you have to get to know each other really well before you decide, yes, we're ready to tie the knot and like make this a real commitment. So that time, that first year, and then working through that agreement was really important. And it doesn't just happen. You don't just meet a person and just jump into business together. So over that 12-month period, I had to kind of hold some clients at bay. But I was able to take on some of our new business and really hone my skills so that then when my non-compete expired, I felt so comfortable presenting the fee-only model to people that were used to a different program. And we had since that time, we have more than doubled the revenue of our company. I opened a second location, so our primary location was in Poughkeepsie, which is about 45 minutes from where I live. So we've opened a second office on the other side of the Hudson River where I live. And I started with a small kind of 10 by 10 one room office. And then last year we hired 2 paraplanners to help support our growing business. And I simply didn't have enough room in this little office. So my husband and I purchased an office building late last year and renovated that and have now expanded that into our new headquarters. And so we have gone from a team of 2 to 3 people to now a team of 5, and more than doubled the revenue of the company, expanded into 2 locations. And I have the dream job that I always wanted, and more time with my family, more flexibility in what I do. One of the things that always made me kind of, not jealous, but really inspired by the standard that Chip set was that he spends time away each year and often will take a month overseas. And I'm getting ready in February to take my family to Costa Rica for a month and work from there. And we're supporting each other in that effort. So being able to buy into this business has allowed me to accelerate the process of having the kind of practice that I really want, learn under someone who has been an incredible mentor, and at the same time really help him transition, and next year he'll be going to part-time with our company and kind of starting the first phase in his scaling back. So for both of us, it's been just such an amazing match. I feel really lucky. I think, it's hard to find that match, but we've worked together on it, and it's been the best thing I've ever done.
Wow. Well, thanks all for sharing. I'm going to share my own smaller experience of growing by acquisition. And I started my practice in 2001 in the Bay Area of California. And after 3 years of doing that in California, I got a wild hair and just said, I'm moving to Colorado. And I had a share with all my clients in California. It's like, I'm moving to Colorado. And, you know, if you don't want to stay with me, I understand. But they all stayed with me. And so I moved to Colorado and started my practice there. And I got a call from a previous ACP member, Susan Strasbaugh. Some of us remember her. In Colorado Springs, she was downsizing her practice and wanted to sell some clients. We had to talk about how that was going to proceed. I suggested that I subcontract to her firm and work with the clients for a year so they got to know me. I felt uncomfortable just like buying them outright. however, my position on that has changed, and I'll tell you why in a second. Well, anyway, so that went well. I would say fairly well. There were about 10 clients altogether, and so the process that Susan used was she wrote a letter, says I'm downsizing my practice, and you have a choice to stay with me, which was kind of odd. You have a choice to stay with me or go with Ross, and so every client had to make a decision on that score. And me as an advisor, of course, you have some clients that you really love to work with. Some were okay, and some was like, maybe I don't want that one. And so, I did get the one I didn't like so much, and she's no longer with me. And then, I remember one couple, they just were really upset about the whole process and just left altogether. So they were kind of offended by the whole process, so you have to be careful about that. And then another because she left the she said, "Oh yeah, if you stay with me, I'm going to double your fee." So she did that. And there was one client who said, "Well, I really like Susan. I want to stay with her." So they stay with her. And so in that situation, I got some that I liked, some that I didn't like so much. So it was kind of ambivalent about the whole process, even though I got some clients out of it. So a couple years after that, so that was around 2005, 2006. And then a couple years later, Stuart Farnell, who we remember fondly, he was selling his practice. And I kind of heard in the grapevine that he was selling his practice, and he was piecemealing it out. He'd said he was going to sell a couple clients. I think it was to Chip. Got Chip, and then few others to client firms in the Denver Boulder area. So I actually was considered to buy three clients of his, and he did it totally differently. And I was kind of shocked about this. He had the last meeting, with the client. I was invited to that, and just as an observer. And then Stuart said, at the end of the meeting, he said, "Ross, thanks for coming." And so, that was my clue to exit. And then after that, after I left, then he said, well, I recommend that you go with Ross, and, you know, and are you okay with that? And so the client had to make a decision. Oh, yes, I want to go with Ross. I don't. But, you know, there's only three clients, but all three of them came over to me, and they're still with me today. So, and I was pleasantly surprised, almost shocked, how seamless that was. And I think it was because we use the same process, you know, same philosophy. And so there might be some minor style differences in terms of personality, but the clients were totally comfortable with my process because it was the same process that Stuart used. So there was no surprise there. The only kind of humorous surprise was I have this the client in Golden, Colorado, and you know, when we got to the investment review, she said, "Don't do what Stuart does and bore me to tears with all that detail." so that was she's one of my favorite clients, and she's still with me today. So, all right. So before we open up to questions, I have a few questions of the panel. Yep. Does Penny have some?
Transition to
what? Okay, yeah, if you want to talk about that.
Okay, so since you guys will probably ask anyway, I will. So with the process for transitioning the clients to Ron, once we decided on, yes, I was going to buy out his clients, we were going to, you know, move the entire client base over, what we did was, it was Ron's job to make sure his clients felt comfortable with the process. Then it became my job to make sure the clients remained happy with me so that I don't lose them. You know, the first renewal's coming up, it's always anxiety, right, when it's renewal time. Hopefully these clients will pay, you know, continue on, that they liked what I did this year because I owe them money regardless if they stay or not. But what we did was, we sent, Ron drafted a letter to his client base letting them know, and he had kind of been building them up for a while that he was thinking about retiring. He wasn't sure when exactly it was going to be, but he knew it would be soon, and that he had kind of prepped them all along going, I'm part of this awesome organization of 150 other advisors that practice similarly to I, and, you know, most likely that's what we're going to, you know, we're going to recommend somebody from there for you. So he kind of prepped them along the way that he was considering retiring. So what he did was draft a letter to his clients letting them know he has made that decision to retire, introducing me in this letter. And then what I did was send to him a folder, my marketing packet, my ADV information about Kyle and I, you know, our firm. So it was kind of a soft introduction. So the clients all got that. And then what we did was I spent several evenings and weekends driving down to Ann Arbor, and we set up 30-minute get-to-know-you, just meet and greet. I didn't have time. I was trying to finish my own year-end planning. I didn't have time to go sit in on client meetings to get comfortable with them that way, or for them to get comfortable with me. So we just set up these, you know, hey, the opportunity for them to come meet me face to face. And some of his clients are out of state, so we set up video meetings. Just the opportunity to ask me whatever question they have. And in the end, a lot of it was, well, I trust Ron. Ron trusts you, therefore I'm willing to take this leap of faith. And then their big concern was, well, what is my fee going to be? And I was tied to the contract anyway. I couldn't raise it more than 10% over Ron's last year fee anyway, so I was kind of tied to his low fees. But yeah, that's a whole nother story. And thankfully for the process, we were able to at least talk about that we practice the same way, the philosophies and the recommendations. I said, I fully trust everything Ron has ever recommended to you. Therefore, you're not going to find things shaken up. We may have some style differences as time goes on, but I'm treating you as if you are one of my legacy clients. and we're just going to jump right in where Ron left off. So that was the big message to the clients, that it wasn't going to be this big drastic change. We did the soft introduction, and I think the real benefit there was the clients, really, they all turned around and said, I trust Ron, he trusts you, therefore I'm going to throw that trust forward, which was a huge leap of faith on their part.
Thanks, Kelly. Before we open up questions, I have some questions for the panel. The first question is, what would you do differently, if anything, looking back?
Not be such a scaredy cat. I think that I had really thought it might be harder for clients, or, oh, what are they going to think or do, or, and, you know, really, we're the best game in town. I mean, if, for instance, Cheryl's retiring, where else are they going to go? And, you know, they have so much value with us. And I think even in us transitioning, or me now transitioning clients to my staff, I have this huge thing. I've known them for 25 years. They're like, oh, yeah, I'll go meet with Cole, or I'll meet. You know, we make this big thing, and what the clients want to know is they're cared for and you still have the same philosophy. And I think that got me a little stuck. And so not be a scaredy cat. And to Lori Nidell, put on your big girl pants and just, for heaven's sakes, grow up. And I do think that the big thing is that you have to decide. I left a big practice, decided to stay a small practice. For 9 years, I didn't take new clients. I never wanted staff. I didn't want to be big. Then, long story, I heard something. I thought, I really can't just let them go by attrition. This is a disservice to clients and me. Decided to grow, tried the merge thing, didn't work, started hiring staff, did work. But you need to decide what you want, because you start incorporating other practices or buying other practices. I mean, I like have a practice, it's a business now, it's a big office, and I have six staff, and it's not me anymore with my paraplanner. And so life does change, so you need to make sure that that's really what you want. Because it's different. But I do think probably the biggest lesson is just grow up.
That's great.
So what would I do differently? That's a hard question. I think in hindsight, I probably should not have bought out Jackie's clients right away, because I didn't have my own processes down. So that would probably be my one piece of advice, would be, you know, if this is buying out clients to increase your client base, would be, you know, make sure you have a handle on your systems before you take on a large chunk of clients, because you're gonna be scrambling just to get to know that many new relationships. It was probably the hardest 6 months of this year, was remembering who was who and what story went with what person. And we worked really hard to try and get photographs, the people that allow us to take pictures of them or to send us pictures for our database, because we could then start trying to remember who was who and what, because it was so many people at once to get to know. Mm. So that was kind of a challenge for me. So I think, point. Yeah, just really think about it before you do it. Ours went, both times, it went so fast, I didn't have time to really think about what the process was going to be and how I was going to onboard all these clients and keep all these relationships straight and make sure I made these people happy, because I just paid for some of them. And in the later case, paid a lot more for them than perhaps I really wanted to. So... know your processes and systems on how you're going to handle that many new relationships at once.
Meredith, any comments on that?
I'll just keep it brief. I think one of the things I would have done differently is probably hire a business coach a little bit sooner. And just acknowledging that while Chip and I have a great communication line, we're not always looking at things the same way. And we have sometimes different goals. We have different perspectives on how things are going. And I was working through this with my study group a couple years ago, and they said, you need a business coach. And actually, Joy Euler, I think, is here in the room, who we've been working with for a couple years. And really having that forum where we can talk and set goals together and hold each other accountable. And we've now actually set up a monthly partners lunch, so we're trying to make sure that those communication lines don't get disrupted. We all get so busy with client work, and we've had a lot of initiatives and a lot of growth, and it's easy to get too much into your own head or to start running in different directions and not be on the same page. And so bringing those conversations together has been really, really important. And sometimes we have different ideas about how do we want to invest in technology, or how do we want to use these different things? And really providing for a good forum for doing that has been really important, and I think we could have done that a little bit sooner.
Thanks, Meredith. Okay, next question is for the panel. What things do you recommend to consider when buying a practice or acquiring a large chunk of clients?
Well, as I said it originally, make sure the philosophy is the same and the expectations are aligned. And, you know, you're going to have different personalities. Cheryl and I have very different personalities. Our practices are different. She was a one-person shop. I'm a big shop. But our values are the same, and the caring was the same. Same with Bert, anything others that I bought. But I think that's really, really important. And to Kelly's point, certainly the processes, because you suddenly add 10, 20, 40 clients, it's a lot. And so if you don't have a tight organizational system and the staff to handle it, you're not going to succeed. And that's the worst possible thing. You're going to have to work hard for a little while to get it all on track. But at least if they come in knowing what to expect, I also think having Cheryl, I keep using Cheryl because first she's here, but that one really worked well. And having her involved, we met the clients first. She sat in on the next two. The value of that was historical memory, because we're getting them cold. And maybe they have the notes and we can see a pyramid and things like that. We don't know what has happened to their life. We don't know their son's in rehab or they just got a divorce. So that having that historical memory really helped. And Bert, too, he's a subcontractor of mine now. Now it's a little different because we teamed with him for a while. But that continuity does help. Just make sure the transition and the clients don't feel this abrupt. Okay, you're theirs now. I haven't done it that way, so obviously it succeeded. But I think having some kind of transitional phase is important.
Kelly or Meredith, any things to add there? What things would you recommend to consider before buying a practice or adding a large chunk of clients?
So I think Penny's hit it spot on. I think the other thing you need to consider is when you are negotiating with somebody else, especially if it's somebody you've known for a lot of years, you're just going to have to realize that there's going to be a lot of really tough discussions. And, you know, in the end, you still want to remain friends with that person, especially if you're buying out one of another from the ACP, you know. And they want one thing, you want another, and everyone starts digging in their heels and going, wait a minute, I don't want to be screwed in this, and I don't want to be screwed in this. And so you have to be prepared for these really difficult discussions with somebody that you really care about. And eventually you'll break through and find that common ground. Would be probably one of the biggest things that I would say. And yeah, the abruptness. So, you know, Ron was able to give me a little bit of, you know, briefing before a client came, before that meet and greet meeting, and told me a little bit about history and had all these kinds of notes and stuff like that. And, he made himself available for phone calls if I needed him, but luckily I didn't. Unfortunately, in the first transition I did from my clients to Bert, that was easy. I had the history already. When I got Jackie's clients, that was abrupt. They didn't know me from Adam. They just knew I'd worked with Jackie in the past and was part of Cambridge. And so they took the bigger leap of faith there. Luckily, I have more of Jackie's clients now still than of my original ones I bought from Bert. So somehow she had better clients than I did. They're just all in their upper 80s and 90s now. So, and that's another thing. You got to look at your client base. One of the things that really attracted me to considering buying out Ron's practice was the fact that the aging of my practice over the last 20 years, they were 50 and 60 when I started with them. You know, now I've got several that are 93, and you just, you know, thankfully, knock on wood, most of them are doing really well, but I'm going to be going to client funerals soon. So Ron's practice was attractive to me because where he was attracting younger people. So now I had an influx of 50 and early 60-year-olds. So now I have kind of a regeneration of a younger old client base. And now my practice is actually starting to attract 30 and 40-year-olds and some 20-year-olds. So somehow we've hit a critical mass, and the younger people are coming in.
Thanks.
So the last thing I would add is you know, I'm not just buying out a book of business, but I was really merging and joining partnership with a person that I'm working with on a regular basis. And sometimes you can hit some real snags if you don't have similar working styles. And so not being afraid to talk about those tough questions. How are we gonna manage business expenses? You know, what are we comfortable paying for? How are we gonna manage time off? Do we have similar philosophies about that? Are we tracking every hour? Or are we kind of comfortable having a loose system for this? And I think if you're not on the same page with the philosophy about that, you can make each other crazy, and it can be a very difficult working relationship. And so you can have a great client transition, but there's rifts in the management, and that can create problems throughout the company. So I think really spending the time up front to talk about how you want to manage those types of things. Like, is it going to make me crazy that he wants to wear red shorts to work? No, you know, I can handle that, you know, or whatever it is. But I've seen, I know the shorts are sensitive. But I think, you know, are there those things that are going to make it difficult for you to work with this person? And do you really have a similar business management philosophy? Because we can transition clients, but then how do we work together? How do we manage a company together, manage a staff together with a common culture and vision? And that takes some time to figure out. And if it's not a good match, it can be a good numbers match, but the personalities may not be a right match. And that's something that you should really pay attention to, because a bad partnership can be as bad as a bad marriage. And I know, I keep saying this, Chip is jokes and calls me his other better half, which is the sweetest thing, but it really is, you're working together, and if you're not having that similar philosophy, it can grind on you, it can keep you up at night, it can make it a really miserable working relationship, and that's not worth it.
Thanks, Meredith.
So we're going to open up for questions now, so...
I'm curious to understand a little bit more whether clients ever learn about the financial circumstances that are in the background of the transfer, and do we have a duty of transparency? Is that an uncomfortable thing to talk about? Like, or they just never find out that they got sold? Like, how does that work?
I can speak to that one. Ron was very sensitive and really did not want his clients to know I bought them. I'm sure they're astute enough to know it was not a cashless transfer, but they've never asked. I've been very careful not to mention, because that was something that he was very sensitive about, so I respected that.
Thanks.
Absolutely not. I don't feel any obligation to share the details of that, and no one has ever expressed that interest even in knowing. They know that you're going to be their advisor now. It just never even comes up. So I don't feel any obligation to share that.
So as the seller of the practice, I can tell you that a lot of my clients are personal friends as well. Quite frankly, I'm pretty sure, I would say 99.9% sure, that never even occurred to any of my clients that they were being sold. They have this idea that I had only their best interest at heart, and that it was totally for their benefit that I found this ideal advisor, which some of my clients had actually, Penny and I had worked with them together because we had worked together years ago, so there was some commonality there. I don't think they had a clue that they were sold.
Any other questions?
I don't think that mic's working.
So that is one option, and that was more of the options on the first succession, the buyout of Bert's clients. It was based on a percentage of renewal over a time period. Ron was very adamant about having a fixed fee. So we had to negotiate a lot harder because I'm like, I don't want to pay for a client that, you know, they decide 6 months from now. So he had to give a little. He had to give in a little bit more, because I was not going to pay for somebody. I wasn't going to pay full freight, because of the risk of losing them. One of the things that ended up in our contract, because we had to come up with a number before the clients agreed to anything, because he couldn't disclose anything. We couldn't send anything out to the clients until we had an agreement. So it's crazy way of going about it, and I'm like, I can't give you a number until I know who's coming with me. How am I supposed to do that? So we ended up having to put in like a stopgap clause. So this was the number unless we didn't hit this in expected revenue, and then it would fall back to a 2x the renewal fee. So we actually came down to, there was one client, you know, we knew the ones that were coming, and we're just going, if they do, it's over. If they don't, it's under. If they do, it's over. If they don't, it's under. And it took us until like the second week of January for this client to make up their mind to know which way our contract was actually going to fall. If it was going to be the number we agreed on, or the fail safe of, because what I didn't want was agree on a number and then all of a sudden I find out only 10 clients are coming. And now I owe whatever it would have been, you know, some ridiculous revenue number. So that's how we settled with that one. I had, you know, it was just each negotiation would be different.
All of mine have been over a period of years, because that's what makes it affordable. you know, you're still getting the revenue from the clients, and then you're paying part of that to buy them. I've never been able to afford just outright what the price is. And in each case, I don't remember the one in 2000, that was too long ago, but the others have been, there's a floor. In other words, if I lose a few clients, I still have to pay X. But presumably the retainers increase. So even if you do lose a few, you're still, you know, you're gonna be able to pay it. So, you know, it's not, it's got room in there in case, but it is a fixed amount, and I think that's good protection for the seller. Because, I mean, I totally believe in that, because if you, you know, do a lousy job or you can't keep the clients, the seller shouldn't lose all the money. So I'm very amicable to that arrangement. I think the acquired client are used to another advisor, so they have a different style. And so you'd have to kind of figure out how to mesh it a little bit. So I would say, yes, there is pressure in that. You know, you have to believe in your own methodology enough and what you're bringing, but there's still their expectation. And so I think for us, we're just have stayed strong in what we do, and they've had to adapt a little, but we're more sensitive to it than a new client where they're just coming in, and there are different personalities because we all attract different people. So you buy a different client set, you're going to have a different set of people that you probably wouldn't have normally got. So there is an adjustment there, absolutely.
Ted, we can't hear.
Yeah, that's not projecting. I don't know if it's recording or not.
I'm just saying, this has been a really fantastic session for me, especially on my stage in my career. Like, I never want to retire. I've had a couple of clients ask me, since I'm the oldest Cambridge member, I know it's inevitable that I'm going to be transitioning in the next year or two or three or four. Conversation with my clients at this point in time.
I have a suggestion, and this is how we did it with Bert, who really didn't want to stop. Is it's been gradual. So the first year we took two of the appointments and he took two. In other words, as the lead, but we were in all of them. And then the next year we did three and maybe he did one. In other words, we kind of broke it out so that he was still involved and he was still part of it, but we were gradually the one running it, even though he'd be there. Now he's in appointments, but really, Cole and I are the ones who run it. I mean, he adds things and tells jokes, but but we're the ones, and that. But that's really important. I don't minimize that because he's still there. So if the client thinks we're going off the rails, he's still got his wisdom and input. But it's been gradual so that nobody feels unsettled by it. Bert doesn't feel unsettled by it, we don't, and the client doesn't. So I think you are in such a great situation to do that, where if you want 3 or 4 years, figure out how to do it. Maybe the new person sits in one time or two times with you, but you run the appointment however many times you meet. Maybe it's only two times. And then maybe the next year they do a little more, and then by that time the client's going to be fine with it. And if you just position it that, you know, you're not going to be here forever, and it's to make sure they're taken care of and there's continuity. Again, they're going to buy into that a lot easier than you think they are, because they don't want something to happen to you, and then what? They like knowing there's someone else there.
Sorry, we've got to end it here. So thanks, panel, and thank you, everyone. Please remember to fill out your evaluation.